Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Los Angeles, I'm Justin Spakus.
And I'm Zach Bertie. Welcome to AnCast. I've lost count. I think it's like 34 or something.
Yeah,
like
somewhere
that.
In there.
Who cares? What's up? What's new?
It's been kind of a lame week for me. I've been kind of a shut-in because of allergy season.
Oh boy.
Something I am not. Time of year.
Yeah, something I am not cursed with. Thankfully.
Damn you!
I think it's growing up in Arizona. Really dry weather. Not a lot of shit in the air.
Yeah, it's not as bad here as I've had at other places, but God, I can't shake this ear infection. It's killing me.
Yeah. Well, that sucks. Sorry to hear that. Mm. before we get into the anime, I wanted to just, you know, briefly touch on some non-anime stuff that we've been watching. Specifically, I really wanted to strongly recommend people go check out How to Train Your Dragon. It was super good. Like, super good. Like, surprisingly good. I guess DreamWorks, like, once every couple years puts out a non-shitty movie. The last one being Kung Fu Panda. This one being, I guess, the next one.
Now, see, I'm a little hesitant to go see it, simply because I'm getting really tired of animated stories about the societal misfit who is true to himself and therefore saves the town.
Yeah, it's not that. I mean, it is that, but this is the theme is the bond between an owner and its pet.
Oh, okay.
Which, of course, resonates with animal lovers and pet owners like myself. Right. But it's also really cute and fun and really well written and very touching in some parts. And specifically, it's actually worth seeing in 3D because it was designed for 3D and there's a lot of really cool, very well done flight sequences that really take advantage of it. Kind of like Avatar did, but I don't know, somehow less irritating than Avatar was. But I couldn't recommend it enough. And check it out if people check it out before it leaves the 3D theaters. It's worth the money. It's good movie.
It's got to be better than Clash of the Titans.
Well, specifically in contrast to Clash of the Titans, which I know,
that movie fucking sucked.
I actually didn't hate it as much as I thought I would. I just kind of walked out going, well, Titans sure did clash.
Well, that was my whole problem with it. It was so dispassionate. I mean, I have seen more passionate filmmaking about a row of dominoes falling over.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very plasticky and very corporate and designed by committee kind of a thing. But so is the original. The original
the original was no great shakes.
Yeah, it was just a summer blockbuster, you know. I mean, it was better, I think, than this was. But specifically, the contrast between How to Train a Dragon and Clash of the Titans is that Clash of the Titans is one of the first examples we're getting of something rushed into 3D in post-production, was not designed to be seen in 3D, and the 3D is terrible. Like, it's really bad. It's really distracting. Did you see it in 3D?
I saw it in 3D. Honestly, I was so disengaged that I didn't even notice how bad the 3D was.
Yeah.
I was just kind of sitting there simmering and nodding off.
Well, who can blame you? But the 3D was fucking terrible, and it's clear that it was a rush job. They did it literally like in like 3 weeks in post-production, and the movie was not designed to be seen in 3D. You have to film things in a certain way in order for 3D to be worth it. Clash of the Titans, totally not worth it. And I'm worried because now there's a bunch of other movies that they're doing that to, like Ridley Scott's Robin Hood, which I have, and I'm a fan of Ridley Scott, and I have no interest in seeing another fucking Robin Hood movie. They rushed it into 3D at the last minute.
Ridley Scott misses as much as he hits.
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, I completely agree with you. I just happen to like a lot of his movies.
Right.
Not that they're anywhere near as good as some people have suggested, but, I mean, he did make, you know, Blade Runner, so there's that.
And he made Blade Runner, and he also made White Squall.
He did. He's had some pretty shitty movies.
White Squall would be entertaining only if you're gay, I think.
Maybe that's true. I'm an unapologetic fan of Gladiator, though, as you know.
Right.
So, a very good example of the stark contrast in quality product hitting 3D. And Clash of the Titans 3D was so bad, it prompted Jeffrey Katzenberg to write that essay about how 3D is dead if people keep fucking it up like they did in Clash of the Titans. Like, it was that bad.
You know, people like us and definitely Jeffrey Katzenberg and people like that are really picky, but the public didn't seem to care that much.
70% drop off in the second weekend, man.
Never mind.
Word of mouth was not good. Not only that, like...
Well, that could have just been chalked up to it being an indescribably shitty movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I think it's describably shitty. Okay. But, well, Katzenberg's point was that it's not a good 3D product. The 3D is not an enhancement. It doesn't look good. And so when you are asking people to pay an extra $5, and now it's $5, the average 3D ticket price is like $17.50 now. And when you're asking for that much extra, it has to be a real enhancement. And so people got used to how much of an enhancement it was in, like, Avatar. Then they see Clash of Titans, they're like, oh, this is just a stupid gimmick. And it was a stupid gimmick in Alice in Wonderland, too. Same thing. So his argument was that the customers are going to notice that this is bad product and start walking away from it, so we can't keep doing this. And I agree with him.
I've never been a huge fan of 3D. I mean, I understand how it might help some things. It definitely helped Avatar, but it's not the panacea. It's not the miracle pill that Hollywood thinks it is. Not even by a long shot.
And they seem to think it is the miracle pill. My God.
And I am laughing at anyone that buys a 3D TV right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. It's like buying an iPad right now. Okay. Right? Maybe it's not the same thing, but...
Well, no, it is the same thing. It's the first generation of something that might have potential years from now, but is way not there yet, and the content isn't there yet, and you're just going to be stuck with a very expensive lump of pretty useless plastic in a few years.
You can pay $3,000 to watch Monsters vs. Aliens, and that's it.
Yeah.
You can't even... Not even Avatar is coming out in 3D next week.
Well, the dirty secret is ratified the format for 3D Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
PS3 is not strong enough to play it.
Right.
So almost... There's probably a pretty good percentage of people that are playing Blu-ray through a PS3. They don't know that they're going to have to upgrade more than their TV. They're going to have to upgrade everything.
Well, somebody mentioned something about the PS3 just needing a firmware update, but I don't know that the hardware is powerful enough.
From what I've read, it's not. It's simply, it's basically the one channel is derived from further decoding the other channel, and it doesn't have enough processor power to do that secondary decoding.
Yeah.
That's what I've read.
I mean, personally, like, I don't care. To have 3D,
I don't either.
To have 3D in my house. I mean, yeah, I'm sure you don't either.
Well, there's yet to be a 3D movie that I would buy.
I'd probably buy Avatar. I can't believe I'm saying that. I buy a lot of shit, though.
This from the guy that went through his collection. Like, didn't you sell half of your collection to FYE or something ridiculous like that?
No, I just culled my DVDs, which a lot of people have done. Right. My Blu-ray selection I haven't really completely gutted it. I just got rid of stuff that, you know, I bought when it was on sale just to watch it, you know?
Right.
That kind of a thing. I go through phases of collector bug, and, you know, lately I've been in a little bit of a collector bug mode.
Fair enough.
But speaking of other American stuff, I finally started watching The Wire, which, as I just commented, it's like finding buried treasure that everyone has been pointing to and telling me where it is and what it is for years, and I just ignored them. I don't need to tell anyone that it's fucking amazing, and I can't believe that I have 5 seasons of it to watch because it's so good.
God. It's burning a hole on my pile, too. Robin has just gotten into it, and she's browbeating me into watching it, and so I will probably watch it very shortly.
In all seriousness, all you have to do is start the first episode. That's it. It's immediately engaging. Immediately entertaining. Immediately you want to see more of it. I got through the first 4 in one sitting. It's 4 straight hours. So,
you know, I don't have a backlog of Breaking Bad to watch anymore. That's another one. If people aren't watching, that's one I highly recommend.
Isn't that doing like record ratings now?
I think it broke a records rating for AMC.
Yeah,
and it deserves to. It is literally the best show that I know of on television. I like it better than Mad Men and Bryan Cranston, former anime voice actor.
Yeah,
he was Isamu in Macross Plus. If you don't know,
oh yeah.
He is phenomenal. It is a great, great, great show. Kind of gross in places, but worth it.
Yeah, I saw the first season. I really liked it. I have not gotten to the second season yet. I'll probably do that after I do The Wire. It's Yeah.
I am utter fanboy. I'll probably have the Blu-rays by that point. You can borrow a second season.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Sounds good. Yep. American stuff aside, anime, what have you seen lately? We just finished the preview guide, so I've seen it. It's done now. Yeah, we're going to bring it back for House of Five Leaves.
Oh, okay. When does that air?
I think it airs tomorrow in Japan or today in Japan, and then it'll probably be ready for review, as we like to say, by the weekend. So the preview guide will be off the front page probably today, and then you'll see it pop back up whenever we get the reviews in. So it'll be back for that show, and then we probably will bring it back again at the end of the month for the last show, which I don't know the name of, but apparently it's auteur directed. So maybe it'll be trapeze weird.
I hope so. there hasn't been a good auteur show this season at all.
No, not at all. But you don't always get one. Like, sometimes it's like once a year you get one.
And frankly, I'm surprised we're still getting that.
And no, Shinbo does not count as an auteur.
No, he doesn't.
So what did you see?
I saw the first episode of Rainbow,
mm-hmm.
I saw which that too. I am not all that enamored by, but will keep watching.
Yeah, I liked it more than I liked Night Raid, surprisingly. It's sort of a brutal, extremely brutal, like, there's a warning at the top of the show about how brutal it is, about a bunch of delinquent kids in, I guess, post-World War II, juvenile detention camp.
To rip off Artie Lang, wah, I got a glass tube shoved up my butt, wah!
Yeah, it's very dark, and it's apparently just Sleepers, which we've mentioned before, the not very widely seen Brad Pitt movie from a couple of years ago, from like a decade, actually, like 15 years ago.
So long ago, I think the late Brad Renfro was one of the kids.
There was a poster for it in my high school drama class.
That's old.
That was a long time ago. at least 15 years. I personally didn't have a strong response to it, but I didn't dislike it, and I want to see episode 2.
It's really over the top.
Yeah.
It is utterly humorless, utterly there it makes its points with a ball-peen hammer. It is utterly lacking in any subtlety whatsoever.
Yeah.
That said, it's not bad. It might go somewhere, and it might go somewhere interesting. It's too early to tell yet.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It's too early to tell with most of this stuff, especially Night Raid.
Yeah.
Did you watch that?
I did. I like it stylistically. The animation was mostly very nice. There were a couple shots that were very, very obviously done for no money because they blew their entire funds on the action scenes.
Yeah.
The one shot in particular where, like, it was just people talking for, like, 5 minutes while the camera panned and then panned back the other way.
Fill some time. Yeah.
Yeah. I was utterly confused by the entire thing. I don't know. I have a rough idea what's going on, but I feel a little bit like the first couple episodes of Baccano.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Where I don't know what's going on, and it's confusing to me, and I'm trying to care, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I certainly didn't care what was going on, because it was so confusing, and just like, what? Who is that? Why is this happening? What, huh?
And it's that's a really good looking show. I love the character designs.
Yeah,
I need something more here.
Yeah, I agree with you, and confusion is not entertainment.
No.
And when I'm confused for 24 minutes, you failed. Not only that, gotta say, something has been said about this, but the premise is icky. Japanese superpowered spies in China in the early 30s. What would we be saying if this were a show produced by Germany about superpowered Nazi spies in Poland in 1932? I don't think we would be quite so forgiving and permissive or immediately accepting of the premise. I need to know where they're going with this. Now, I think it's really unlikely it's going to turn into nationalist revisionist history propaganda. I don't think that's what it's going to be, but the potential's there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. Japanese have been much harder headed about denial of World War II and revisionist history than Germany has,
yeah,
just overall. And if they went head-on into what the rest of the world knows happened, you know, and I know the Japanese equivalent of the Tea Party movement would go apeshit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Like, they would be the TV station would be picketed.
Yeah. Well, like, obviously they're not going to get into Nanking. Obviously right. They're not going to go there. But the problem is, like, if you have any idea what was really going on at the time, how can you watch this show and not be really distracted by that? It's really distracting. Like, I was sitting there like, wait a minute. Hang on just a second. These are the bad guys in World War II, not the good guys. What the F?
This is a country that gave us Hetalia, so,
yep. You know. Yeah, so they're not really...
No one is paying that attention, that close attention to the history books.
I think on this one, I think it's a pretty... Well, maybe it's not an obvious choice for a license, but I think it might get licensed, so I think I'll just wait.
Maybe I've heard that this show would probably play a lot better with a dub, I think.
You think so? There's so much bad Chinese in it, though.
Well,
like the bad Chinese in Sword of the Stranger?
Yeah, which I'm still pissed about that because they didn't even dub it. They just left that in the original language. I would hope that whoever gets this would be a little more careful about it. The thing is with any time you have Chinese in an anime, there are enough Chinese expats in America that you could probably cast a dub and have characters that speak bilingually pretty darn well.
Yeah.
Same with Spanish. You know, there's a big Spanish language community of actors.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I don't know why they've never done that before, but they totally should. So the other thing that I saw was the second episode of Kaicho wa Maid Sama.
I just finished the first episode.
What did you think?
I cringed a few times at how bad it was production value wise. Like,
it's pretty cheap.
It's really cheaply animated, and there are a few scenes where the music just like they clearly just threw in a music track without any regard for the emotional content of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
But it's charming.
Yep.
I like it.
Second episode's not as good.
No.
I just was very entertained by that first episode, and the second one was wacky hijinks at the school festival, which how many times have we seen that episode? But the emotional content sort of came in near the end, and whenever they focus on the relationship between the class president and the, you know, coolest kid in school, it gets interesting all of a sudden. So that relationship dynamic is interesting enough to keep me watching it. The comedy kind of fails. There's a lot more of the, like, I hate men. Men are evil shit in the second one, which I get that's the character, but a little over the top, a little too much of it. So
hey,
I don't
that's
know.
Annoying in real people.
I would give this show a solid B- and say that it is entertaining, you know, for like a Sunday afternoon. Like, got nothing else to do? Check it out. It's not a strong recommendation.
Yeah, it's like I could say the same thing about Karen.
I couldn't. You're alone on that one, man.
I thought Karen was kind of cute. I would watch that if I was bored.
Good for you. I just didn't like it. Karen.
Picky bastard.
Yeah. Well, hey. You're picky in other ways.
I know.
So, what else is new?
Well, everyone has been... Well, not everyone. The two people that care are kind of probably noticing that we haven't been adding any video to the site lately.
Right.
And that's for good reason, actually. We have been developing a new video player for the site. We've been using a semi-open source player for a while, and although it got the job done, it caused a bunch of problems, and we ran into a lot of its built-in limitations that meant that we couldn't really do what we wanted. So now we finally broke down and started making our own. We should roll that out in hopefully another week or two.
Yeah, you showed it to me, and it's a lot better.
Yeah.
It's
a lot
better.
You don't get that giant glitch every time that... every time it starts an ad now.
Yeah, I mean, even though I work here, I didn't really use the previous one that much, but this one I would use. This one I would use a lot more. So,
right. You know. So the switching players also means that I had to re-encode every piece of video we've ever posted on the site.
Fun.
My computer has been going nonstop 24 hours, except for that one week we were in Tokyo,
right.
Since mid February, re-encoding everything. And there's a whole bunch of stuff from Funimation that I just didn't get to with the old method.
Right.
So all that stuff will be going up in a couple weeks. Plus, we're putting back up all that old stuff from Toei.
Oh, right.
Which we have directly from Toei now. So hopefully the quality will be a little better. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking, you know, 130 episodes of Galaxy Express, 101 episodes of Slam Dunk. That's a lot of video.
Yeah.
So that's going to keep me busy for a little while yet.
Yeah, thank God for the West Coast power billing rates, right?
Oh, I know. God, if I was doing this in New York, I would be like thousands of dollars.
Well, that's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that. The new player, when you showed it to me, it went really smooth. It was Hulu-esque.
Oh, and I'm really, really proud of the video quality we're getting. It was worth re-encoding everything because the video quality is just far and away better.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. All right, well, let's go ahead and bring the guest in.
Joining us this week is coming live from Tokyo is Chi. And how do you say your full name?
Merichi Umenachi.
Yeah, not going to attempt that. Although that sounds like that katakana eyes is really nicely.
Yes, it does. It does.
So anyway, Chi, as he is called, we're going to use today, is a PhD candidate at Tokyo University of Technology. He's under a grant from the Japanese government to study the anime industry over there. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
So that you were originally a grad student studying animation at USC, is that right?
I was actually a film student at USC, so I was really I loved your talk last week about film students and what it's like trying to tell other people how to improve their work. I totally understood that.
So this sounds, I gotta say, like a really, really sweet gig. How did you get it?
It is. I can't lie. I double majored in East Asian languages and cultures when I was at USC, and I've always been a big anime fan. It was a huge influence on my work and like my wanting to be in the entertainment industry. So my professors at USC actually had all gone on programs like this. Like if you're really into Japan, then it's almost kind of within the Japanese studies in world on the West Coast. It's really a common thing to do to try. And it's almost kind of like a rite of passage to, if your research is really good enough, you should be able to get a grant from the Japanese government to go actually study in Japan. And I think I was the first one that really wanted to do something like that about the anime and manga industry. And I think because I had that USC background and my school, my USC film school actually has a sister schoolship with my university here in Japan, Tokyo University of Technology, and Tokyo University of Technology has this really good relationship with the Japanese government. So it was a lot of like just a perfect storm of things falling together.
Real quickly, I got to ask, what is the I mean no offense, I'm just curious. What is the stature of the Tokyo University of Technology? Because in America, if you put technology in a school name, usually it means like you're learning how to be a legal assistant or something. So what
dental hygienist?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So where is it in like the rank? Is it like a big school there, or where does it sit?
So not at all. But it's really well known within the Japanese media industry. Okay. So, the Tokyo University of Technology is, one of the few like 4-year universities that actually has, programs in, anime production, manga production. And they literally like research how to make the anime and manga industry better, but from an engineering perspective. So they have, they boast the highest, the most state. I can't. It's hard for me to think in English. It's been a while since I've spoken English like this much. They have the most state of the art media equipment. So they have the largest green screen and blue screen studios, the largest motion capture studios. So a lot of the times, if you're playing a PS3 game or anything that has like Onimusha or anything that has like really huge action, 3D action in it, it's probably been partly produced at my university. Okay. So within the gaming and anime industry, my school is pretty well known.
So it's a respected trade school.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Great. Okay, just curious.
So I have to, going at this from the point of view of an American who has, mm-hmm. Been 3 years in the university system here, going to a Japanese media school, what's that like? What kind of culture shock was there in terms of like the difference in how things work?
The interesting thing is it's a lot like because my school is not just media. There's other departments there, and it's also it's mostly an engineering school. And the biggest shock was how not seriously Japanese students take higher education. So I don't know if you've ever heard the phrase that for America, it's easy to get into American universities, but hard to get out, and as in hard to graduate. And Japanese universities are the opposite. They're really hard to get into. But then once you get in, it's kind of like you're expected that they will graduate you no matter what you do. So it's college is the time for Japanese kids to just blow things off. So our department is pretty much the only department where like kids and the students and the professors take things seriously. But other than that, I was really surprised by like just the nonchalance of the rest of the school.
Sounds awesome. And speaking as someone who took 5 years to finish a film degree, I did my fair share of slacking.
No, I understand. It took me 4.5. So.
So, briefly tell us what it is exactly you do. I'm still a little cloudy on that.
Well, so my research is, I've been there for a long time, actually. I'm working on my PhD now, and before then I was working on my master's. And my master's was specifically international strategy for Japanese small anime studios. And then my PhD is... As expanded on that to competitive strategy for Japanese small animation studios. So so essentially, like the way they do research programs here in Japan is that you pick a problem in your like research topic in our department's all media, and then you find some way to solve that problem. And right now, so I do research on, as you both know, like the problems that are in the Japanese anime industry right now. And part of that research is practical research. That's why I started my own studios. And then the rest of the research is also meeting with people in the industry, constantly reading the economic reports and following where the money is going, and then writing papers based off of... traditional like business theory, like why things are going the way they are and how to improve them, and doing presentations at the Tokyo Anime Fair and things like that.
Wow, you must be spoiled for choice on things that have gone wrong in that business.
Yes, I know. I'm constantly being told, narrow it down. Pick one problem. Okay, pick one part of that problem. It's still too big.
So what are the biggest problems that you have narrowed in on, and what, if any, solutions have you found?
It's going between micro to macro. And I was just talking with my business partners last night to, beef up for this interview. So the whole structure of the industry is unsustainable. And if on a macro level, the way that we constantly compare it to Hollywood because that's an example of an industry that works, and
kind of
more than any, as opposed to, let's say, a nation, the most successful entertainment industry. If you compare nations in the world, the American entertainment industry, and Hollywood has this really great system of the support from the government and a very logical factory banking-like structure for the industry itself. And the Japanese industry, the way it works, it's so insular that it's a one-time, in Japanese you say shita-uke. It's like they live check to check. Yeah, and there's no system set up. The great thing about the entertainment industry is that it's, how do you say this in English? You can produce something once and then remarket it, repurpose it, and constantly get annuities from it
in Long Tail.
Long Tail, exactly. And they it's not set up to do that in Japan. And to do that, they have to really restructure so much of it. So I guess I'm trying to pick a specific part of that macro problem.
Well, when I do licensing, one of the biggest problems that I run up against is the Genjutsu system, mm-hmm. the whole original problem with the original creator basically mm-hmm. getting sign-off for everything you do with their property from that there on out.
Exactly. The Seisaku Inkai, the fact that it's like a joint production between lots of different parties, and every party has a piece of the rights. And without their, and even if they don't have a piece of the rights, culturally, you're supposed to get their permission anyway before you move or do anything. Yes, I definitely understand that problem.
So, if you could just explain to people who haven't worked with the rights, what happens in that system that causes the problem?
Well, so to explain that, you really have to understand Japanese culture and how Japanese culture, just everyone wants to do everything in a group. No one wants to take responsibility or take the risk. So, and also because there's no a financing system like there is in the United States, they have to split. Everyone wants to split the financial risk as well. So as we all say, know that a lot of anime comes from a manga that starts out in Shonen Jump or one of the weekly magazines. So the manga writer and the publisher of that manga will tie up with the toy companies, who will also tie up with the TV networks. And they'll all throw money in the pot. And they'll tie up with a production studio, and they all throw money in the pot, saying, "Well, we're gonna keep the profits from our medium. When this property goes live and goes on all these different mediums, the publishers want to keep the money that comes from publishing. The toy company wants to keep money that comes from toys. And so now they've shared the risk, they're sharing the profits, they're also sharing the rights. And as the anime goes through all these different stages, or as the properties go through all these stages, they just chop up pieces of the pie, and they constantly do that for the entire lifespan of the content. The problem comes, as you mentioned, when international companies come in and they want to get the rights. And Hollywood, because we're a very logical, like, kind of system, they want to get everything all at once and then forget about dealing with the rights for the original rights holders, you know.
So what happens in Japan? So someone comes in, asks for the rights, and then what happens?
So they come in and usually, you know, they try to figure out who has all of the different rights in Japan. And they try to find one group, like one spokesperson that they can talk to who can work with them efficiently and say, okay, here, this is what we're going to give you. This is our what we want in royalties. And they're inadvertently, they're inevitably told that, well, I can't make any, my group, let's say I'm the anime studio, I can't make any decisions. Please go ask the mangaka and make sure he says it's okay. If he says it's okay, then we'll say it's okay. They go ask the mangaka. The mangaka's like, well, go ask the publisher. You know, if the publisher says it's okay, I'll give my okay. And they just keep sending around in circles. And every time, every part of the negotiation process, they get sent around to everyone and asked to get a yes from each person, because nobody wants to say yes if another group hasn't said yes yet. And in Japanese business, that's really everyone understands that, and everyone knows that you're supposed to take all of the it's called neimawashi. You're supposed to take all of the people who are involved, all the main players from each group, out for drinks, get them drunk, and then do your negotiations while drunk, because Japanese people hate confrontation. So they don't. The only time they really can tell you what they're really thinking and negotiate you is when they're drunk. So
we call that a real problem here.
Yes,
that's a real problem.
But you know, like the major the studios that have been doing this for a long time. You know, the ADVs and the Funimations and the manga entertainments. You know, they all know that, and once they've established. Like they've recently, in the past 5 to 10 years, either they've been around long enough that they're part there have been so many different ways to try and possible solutions where like the international studios have tried to get in from the ground up, being part throwing in money from the very beginning on new content, or setting up deals where once they got that system set up and they're like, okay, for every you're going to make something new and this is what we're going to pay you for it and this is what we're going to keep, and they've already got those systems set up. The problem is though that it's still when they do that they negotiate it so pretty much they keep all of the international profits. So none of that money ever comes back to Japan. They from a business perspective, it just makes more sense to try and get your best deal, and they'll try and, you know, just buy the rights outright, one-time fee, or, you know, so that they don't have to keep paying royalties and stuff back to the Japanese studios. And so then the Japanese companies themselves, because they have so few international internationalized people, you know, people who speak English, people who understand the Western systems and can follow the Western accounting, like, for most of these old Japanese men who have all the power, they don't want to deal with that. So all their business model revolves around the Japanese market, which is shrinking. So it's just long-term wise, it's the Japanese market has to figure out a way that they can skip the middlemen and start distributing internationally themselves and bringing that money back to the content creators.
Hence, we've seen stuff like Bandai Visual USA and
exactly.
So do the Japanese as a whole, do they get the American fans at all? Like, do they understand the appeal to the American fans, or are they just kind of, we'll take your money, but we don't really understand?
So, you know, one thing I should caveat everything I say with, you know, I'm going to be making generalizations, you know, right. And for everything I say, there's going to be an exception. But in a short answer, no, they don't understand Americans at all. And that's also the problem, is that they don't expect themselves to. It's not even that they don't understand, it's that they don't think they can, and they don't really
try.
Like, even if they try to, they go into it assuming, like, part of their, like, inherent, you know, they have this complex, this, like, love-hate inferiority complex with Western fans in general, where they, part of them wants to be like, oh, our Japanese content is so inherently Japanese that the foreigners can't understand it, or the way they understand it isn't the way we understand it, which vice versa means we're not really going to ever understand the way you understand it, and that's part of their pride as well. So,
well, that's certainly a way to dominate a market.
Yes. Oh my God. So my master's research was mostly focusing on that, how to solve that, those cultural issues, and internationalize the anime studios themselves. And one thing, another problem in Japan is that they're running out of children. The population is shrinking. So there's less and less young people who want to go into the anime industry. They say, I met you at the for the second year in a row at the Tokyo Anime Fair, and I mentioned right. This how the anime industry now is split between kids straight out of college and guys over 40. Nobody in between. So there's this huge, like, human resources problem that the Japanese government understands, but the old guys, just like the Hollywood old guys a couple years ago when we were telling them, you know, to get on the internet, get new media, they just want to stick their heads in the sand until they die or they retire. And then it's
because they don't understand the internet, computers, scary, yada, yada, yada.
Exactly.
Hey, maybe I'm going to throw this out. Let me make a really quick suggestion here. Just that this could be a potential solution. Get the government to start producing anime that sexualizes actual mature Japanese women and not little cartoon girls. And maybe you'll, like, start an otaku resurgence of interest in real Japanese women.
I almost feel like I almost feel like I wish I didn't give you my real name, because I want to agree with you so wholeheartedly. This is gonna get back to, like, the you know, my colleagues in the industry. I was just having an argument about this same thing. Like, I made a joke about that last week, where, you know, I was saying, you know, moe is over, right? It's on the downhill, right? And they were just like, no, that's the only thing that makes us money in this in our market. I don't know. I completely agree. You know, I was trying to tell one of my master's research major suggestions was that to hire international students, like exchange students, the Japanese schools have realized, especially the ones like mine that have, you know, majors in anime, gaming, and manga, that the solution to Japan's future, you know, young people problem is to import young people from other countries, like myself. And the Japanese government's totally behind it. The Japanese education system's totally behind it. But the Japanese working industry is still trying to wrap their heads around it. But essentially, if you can hire these international students who are obviously lovers of Japan, they're almost always bilingual. They have to be because they went to school in Japan. And usually their interest from Japan came from anime, manga, and games. So for that industry, anyway, it's like they're already, you know, on the bandwagon. Those, if you can hire these international students, they usually have an understanding of both their own culture and the Japanese culture. So they can help you market and repurpose your content and be like, yeah, this Moe Lolita content's probably not going to sell in the United States, or you're probably not going to be able to put that on the air.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong here, but that stuff isn't exactly appealing to the mainstream in Japan either, is it?
No, but have you ever heard the it's a big topic in the new media industry, or in the music industry in the United States as well, is the idea that you need 1,000 core fans who will spend $100 a year on your content. If you can get those 1,000 core fans, then you have a much more steadier income, because essentially the entertainment industry in its best form is a banking industry, and people want stability, and otaku are stable. It's not a hit business.
Maybe financially.
Financially. You know that if you go for the really freaky, or the really, I don't even, see, they're going to get mad at me for using the word like freak, but the really like niche stuff, the niche otaku are consistently going to buy every product and every version of that product and every merchandising medium of that product consistently for you. So that's where the money is, the consistent money is, that they can count on.
And that's still the case there, that the Moe stuff is consistently making money. That's still the case, because we've been hearing that it's been on kind of like a downward trend.
I agree. I completely agree. And I think the people that I was talking to last week, they're kind of like, they don't want to admit that it is on the downturn, because it scares the shit out of them. So they don't know what to do next. It's been a really nice ride. But yeah, I think it's on the downhill. The only thing is that I don't think anybody knows what to do next.
Right. Well, we haven't figured out the next big gimmick.
Yeah.
That hasn't come around yet.
Or the next consistent thing that can mean consistent money, rather.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. So tell us what kind of trends are you seeing over there? In your experience, like, what's the most popular stuff? Versus what the otaku are really into, what are your, like, colleagues into? What kind of shows do you guys like?
Ah. So it's funny, like, my colleagues are all pretty much the internationalized community within the anime industry. So I noticed that we're very Americanized. Like, the kind of stuff that American male college students are into. So the action based anime, the sci-fi supernatural based anime, you know, I hate to say this because it has a little bit of there's another big trend that I'm seeing, two trends. So one thing we're seeing now is this mix of moe plus action. So the one thing we were really excited about was Dance in the Vampire Bund, because we felt like, okay, you can make the money from the moe side on in the United States, and you can add like the sci-fi action, and maybe you could get around the almost constantly naked Lolita characters. And then the other major trend is In Japanese, it's shuru comedy. So the dry, witty, really dry, really witty anime like Astro Fighter Sun Red and what do you call it? Kami Usagi Roppe and you know, the gag anime.
The gag anime that doesn't translate at all.
Exactly.
Great.
You hit it on the mark. I'm also hoping for and kind of seeing a little bit of a trend of the, from a business point of view, of selling these anime into different markets. Like the gag anime, Kami Usagi Roppe is being shown a lot in movie theaters right before movies come on, and adding value to the movie theater market. You made a really good comment last week about how the big money is in like theatrical now, or I guess the big money is in like one thing people are looking to try and save their bottom line is going theatrical. And before the theatricals, putting these short gag animes kind of harkens back to the early days of the movie industry in the United States.
Looney Tunes before the show.
Exactly.
So you obviously have a lot of you deal a lot with the students there, and I imagine you have some exposure to the undergrads as well.
Yes.
What is the curriculum like over there, and how is it different from animation school in the States?
Good question. So the interesting thing is we have like a sistership with the USC Anime School, as I mentioned. So we bring out animation students once a year for the Tokyo Anime Fair and send them over there. Our school, because of that sistership, is gradually trying to bring the curriculum more to the American style, where, say, you have the graduate students mentoring the undergrads, and the undergrads can work on graduate student projects. I think more at most schools in Japan, it's the research, the professors have, like, the school has two or three major projects that they work on, and they might be like a joint production with an established anime studio, usually one of the really, really old ones that are really respected, like Tatsunoko Productions or Tezuka Osama's group, or recently we're trying to set up another one with a guy that did the Lupin the Third,
Monkey Punch.
Yeah, he was at our school a couple days ago. So they'll have two or three of these major like joint projects, and then they pretty much just throw work down to the undergrads and have them work on it, and then say that's their assignment, and then graduate them.
Sounds a lot like film school.
Yeah. Well, I felt, because my major experience with film school was at SC, and I don't know how it was at other schools, but I felt like in the American system, there was much more individual go-getter spirit, where, like, you had your own projects, and you tried to make your own films, or maybe make your own team, and you were, like, really trying to build your own, your portfolio and your own demo reel kind of thing. But I really feel like the kids here, it's kind of more just like a hobby for them. None of these kids they're just expecting to, their dream is that they'll get graduated and then find like employment lifetime, like that exists anymore, employment at some anime game studio that they respect, and then they'll be able to survive and have a great life and support a family on that income for the rest of their life. So there's
Yeah. They are aware of the harsh reality that, you know, in-betweeners are getting, like, you know, $15,000 a year, basically.
Yes. See, this harsh reality is becoming, really, I think, just started seeping down into the student population. Probably around 5 years ago when I first got here. But now you really see it. And now, the major thing is, like, like I was telling you at the anime fair, they'll graduate, go into the industry for anywhere from 3 days to 3 years, and then quit and become engineers. Or they'll expect to do that. A lot of students realize now that they're probably just going to apply to become engineers when they graduate. And they're just learning the anime industry stuff because it was something they were really interested in too, and they always wanted to.
So it's treated as like a starter career.
Yeah, exactly. Huh.
Do you see, like, I'm sure, you know, most of them are just happy to be rank and file, but do you see anybody with auteur proclivities, like people who want to express that individualism, and does the school do anything for them?
So I can speak mostly, yes. There are a couple, two or three schools that are really trying to encourage that, and they're the kind of schools that are very, like, trying to westernize as well. And so they're starting, like, contests and festivals and internship programs so that they can show off these star students. But even so, you get this impression from those, like, superstar students and things like that, that they don't, they, everyone realizes that they don't expect to make enough money to support themselves or support a family on this. It's almost like the fan sub community, where they're doing it for the respect within the community, but they're still going to have a day job kind of thing.
Hmm. That's disconcerting. So you really don't see a lot of people, because when I was in film school, everyone in the room thought they were walked in with the assumption that they are the next Martin Scorsese.
When most Kubrick of them, at my school.
Yeah, most of them would be lucky to be the next Troy Duffy. yeah, and that sounds like that's a very rare thing to have someone walk into animation school saying, I am going to be the next, you know, Mahiro Maeda, or, you know, or the next, you know, Hayao Miyazaki. So it sounds like that's not, that kind of ambition is not common.
That's not common in Japan in general, just right. From culturally. So yeah, for sure. Even if they did think that, they probably wouldn't show it to anybody, because that would be that kind of cockiness is really looked down upon.
And so what kind of anime is popular among the undergrads, among the students?
So it, you know, by definition, if you go to, like, any of these schools, it's a otaku orgy fest. So that, for most of the guys there, it's still the moe stuff, but the gag anime stuff is really making you know, moves within that community.
So they're really into, like, K-On! And stuff.
Yes,
like that.
I was just about to say that. Yes, okay. You know, it's like I try really hard to not distance myself, but not to get this is a bad word too, infected by the otaku community, because you know, my research and my whole, like, choir speech is like, we need to go international. We need to remember. We need to understand what international market thinks. And when you hang out with, like, the otaku community, which is so much of what my colleagues are, you know, it's the people who are willing to do this and work in this industry and sleep under their desks and have daytime jobs or nighttime jobs or work at konbinis, even though they're, you know, anime design, really renowned designers and stuff. They are the super otaku. So you start to get this, like, you know, tunnel vision, where you think, oh, this is the way the rest of the world thinks. And it's really just the studio heads and the producers who still remember, like, no, this is not the general market, even here in Japan. The students themselves are still, the majority of them are super otaku who love the K-ons and the moe stuff.
So, okay, so that leads me to this next thing. So it sounds like the otaku stuff, the moe stuff, mm-hmm. for someone like you, you sound like you're a very creatively ambitious person. For someone like you, that sort of thing is not necessarily very attractive, because mm-hmm. creatively you kind of have to work within this box, within these tropes, mm-hmm. in order to get it to appeal. But say like you just wanted a paycheck. Say like you just wanted a paycheck, and you could just come up with, like, okay, there's four cute little girls and they run an ice cream shop. Yes. And it's called Moe Moe Ice Cream Coon or whatever. And could you just push that through? Is that something that would be easy to get produced? Is that an idea you can just take, even though it's a little creatively bankrupt, and just run with it?
For sure. And even more so is if you go with the hentai route. If you just want to make money. Or the Aero game route. Or just go a little bit. And then I don't want to go, like you mentioned this last week too, is like it's starting to disappear, but you go the late night anime route. Mm-hmm. So those are the easiest ones to get made without having like a manga that, or a novel, a shosetsu that's already attached.
Okay, that's really that's interesting, and that's why I guess that's why you see so much of that stuff, because it's easy to get that made.
It's essentially like reality TV.
Wow.
Like okay. For America.
Okay.
It's just okay. It's cheap. You don't have to think about it. It's just something that you can pull the trigger on.
Exactly.
Wow, that's very interesting. So, any positive trends that you're seeing? Anything that's heartening?
Yeah, give us something here.
That's heartening to
I know,
you.
I know. You know, it's funny. Like all the reviewers and stuff of your podcast talk about how you guys are so cynical and stuff. But you know, if you're in this industry long enough, it's just doom and gloom. I guess. I want to say a positive trend is that at least they know there's a problem now. Okay. And most people know what the problems are. And I do see much more. When I first got here, even 5 years ago, one of my favorite mentors in this industry is Kaoru Umfame. And he's a half black, half Japanese producer, former vice president of manga entertainment. And he's been in this industry for like, you know, 20 years. And I used to talk to him about being a foreigner in the Japanese anime industry. One positive trend is I do see like a much, much bigger acceptance of foreigners in the industry and a willingness to hire them compared to American standards of hiring. The industry here is still ridiculously racist and nationalist. But from a Japanese point of view, it's definitely, even in my 5 years since I've been here, progressing towards internationalizing their staff and internationalizing their ambitions for the company. So I see that they will understand us someday.
You're an African American, and
yes.
Do you run into lots of stereotyping there? I have to ask.
It's more like the opposite. Do you run into people who don't think of you as a stereotype every once in a while? And I would say yes. It's the running into people who think of me as a stereotype is the norm, and then running into people who don't is what happens every occasionally, refreshingly.
That's interesting.
That's got to get you down after a while.
you know, it's funny. Like I was just watching a Chris Rock thing last week, Kill the Messenger, and in it he talks about how like if you go into it expecting that, then when it happens, it doesn't surprise you, and when it doesn't happen, it does surprise you. So your standards just kind of flip, you know. And I look at it as an opportunity. I just look at it as an opportunity to usually when opportunity to change the way people think and open their minds. And when you do that, they're usually the positiveness that comes from that is so great that just seeing somebody's eyes open and their mind open, and then think, wow, this might apply to everything I believe in, the way I create content and the way I sell my content and the way I think about the people who watch my content. And when you see that their eyes open like that, it's a great, you know, feeling of like achievement. So I always look forward to that second step when I meet people.
That's cool.
That at the same time, I have to say, as a metropolitan American, that sounds kind of horrifying.
What from the current season? What's currently airing that you personally like?
You know, it's weird. Like being a business person, I have this like I'm constantly looking towards the future and the past. So I have like a list of anime that I got to watch because they did something right or they surprised the industry in some way, and I'm catching up on those. Or I'm working on, I know a bunch of things that are coming down the pipeline that are really interesting.
That's good news.
But then, you know, I had this long talk for about the past week asking my partners what I can talk about what's coming down the pipe. And pretty much everything is MDAs.
Yeah.
Right. I'm used to that.
We're totally used to that. It's fine.
So for me, you know, the stuff that I'm catching up on my gag anime. And that's, for me, that's my big kick right now.
Being fluent, do you get it?
Yes. Well, but even so, like, but so I say that I should qualify that. I get like 60% of it. And I prefer to watch gag anime is the last frontier for me where I really need to. I prefer to watch it with subtitles. Mm-hmm. Everything else, I can watch it without subtitles. But yeah, for me, for gag anime, I understand the humor, but a lot of times it's just it's weird. Like, I'll see the Japanese situation and then I'll read the English subtitles and then the Japanese humor filter in me kicks in. And I, like, go back, and I'm like, oh, I can see why that's funny to a Japanese person. And
then you get the joke, it's just not funny.
No, you see, it's weird, like, you know, I have, like, the Japanese side of me and the American side of me, and if I'm in Japanese mode, it makes me laugh. If I'm thinking like a Japanese person. But it's funny because when I read the subtitles, I switch back into American mode because I'm reading in English, and then I have to go back into Japanese mode and I laugh. So, for example, you know, have you guys seen Astro Fighter Sun Red?
I have, yeah.
I have.
So, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's really based on a small suburb of Tokyo called Mizunokuchi.
I've read that, yeah.
I actually live, like, maybe 5 minutes away from Mizunokuchi. So, the humor of that whole anime is the fact that you have these wild, crazy, these surreal beings living such mundane lives,
mm-hmm.
and everything you see and everything they talk about are things that you really see in our neighborhood. So it'd be like, you know, the Ninja Turtles or something talking about the Third Street Promenade in LA, or like Second Avenue, or, you know, talk about real, like, Mexican burrito shops that we all, like, who live there know about.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of it from that, like, oh, this neighborhood kind of point of view, that show is hilarious. It's ridiculously funny. But if I step back on it and look at it from, like, an American watcher's point of view, I'm like, what is this?
If I'm to make a huge gaping generalization here, it uh-huh. sounds like about 70% of the ills of the current anime industry come from it being just way too insular on every level and just kind of eating its own tail, both creatively and market-wise. I remember in the 80s, most anime creators were citing things like Streets of Fire and, you know, American stuff. And, you know, Basson, even Jean-Luc Basson, things that were not Japanese, that they were gaining their inspiration from. Is there anything like that today?
Non-Japanese stuff that they get inspiration from? Oh, that is a very, very good question. I want to say yes, but again, my what do you call it, is really biased because, you know, the international people around me that I work with, a lot of them have studied in the United States. They speak fluent English. One interesting thing I discovered recently is, like, kind of like a backlash. There's starting to be like a kind of a backlash towards American animation, especially Pixar.
Really?
nobody wants to talk about it, but they're kind of like sick and tired of people telling them, you know, they need to do things the American way. They need to go into 3D animation. They feel like they've tried all this and it doesn't work. And because of as the money dries up, people become even more focused on what works and what makes money for them. and they get this kind of like this pride. Well, we understand this and it's the only thing that's keeping food on the table. So I feel like amongst the international community, a big thing that people are really inspired by are the television programs, the dramas from the United States, the live action dramas that make it to the international community. It's kind of, I see like the reverse of what I grew up with, where I grew up with, like, you know, the cool hip kids, as we thought of it in the United States, would go on the internet and download Japanese animation that was like the hottest stuff on Japanese TV maybe 2 or 3 years before. While the cool and hip kids in the entertainment industry in Japan go on the internet and download the American dramas that were like the coolest, hippest thing in America like 2 years ago.
So like 20, so, like 24 and Lost and stuff like that.
Exactly. Burn Notice. Mad Men. Chuck. You know, those,
Chuck?
Yes.
I'm more mystified by Burn Notice.
It's a kind of humor that Japanese people that like the that it's a little bit slapstick. It's just slapstick enough that they get it, you know?
And then it has some action. It has some action elements, and yeah.
Yes, exactly.
That's really interesting. So I guess we're going to start seeing anime that resembles American dramas, although that could be a good thing. You know, you never know.
And you know, some of the people, I do saw some interest in, there's these different factions. There's some groups that are thinking about like the comedy route and maybe marrying moe to like, stuff like Hannah Montana kind of ish.
Yikes. So,
oh my God.
That's a nightmare.
Well, because Hannah Montana made a lot of money. So they're thinking, like, this is an example of American moe. But what they don't realize is that, I guess they realize it, but it's like, you know, it made a lot of money with American little girls.
Yeah.
So they're thinking that maybe they could do the moe stuff in Japan, make money from these 30, 40-year-old geeky Japanese guys, and then port that over and focus on Western little girls and use that same content. Because that's where the whole idea is, like, you want to take your big moneymaker and just repurpose it so that you don't have to spend a lot of extra money on it again. You know?
That is an indescribably bad idea.
Well, yeah, they're not going to be able to resist sexualizing Hannah Montana in the version that's aimed at otaku. And that's completely unacceptable in any way for the American family audience. So I do not see that working out at all, but good luck to him.
Oh, we got to throw our hands out, strings of hope somewhere.
Yeah. Well, you did say there was some exciting stuff coming down the pike. And yes. Have you seen it? I mean, have you seen anything recently that besides the gag anime, anything that excites you or you thought was good? Anything, not just this season?
Well, so again, this is we switch into two. Does it excite me personally as in that it's I want to watch it, or does it excite me personally as in like this might do it. This might make money, or this might. Right now it's all about just trying, and it sounds so cynical, but it is really about making money because the industry is bleeding. And we need something that's going to make money and that's going to boost morale and have people – something that people can get behind and be like, okay, let's – we did it. We can penetrate international markets. We can – there is a future in this industry. I'm not going to become an engineer. So one thing that I'm kind of seeing is that a trend – I'm hoping it becomes a trend is – Western producers asking Japanese animation studios to make anime-style versions of Western stuff. So the Dark Knight Returns, the Animatrices, those kind of stuff. If we can just skip the Japanese market in general and just become kind of like an outsource house for Western producers, I think for the short term, that would be a really great, because the money is so different. It's like the kind of money a studio can make making a Dark Knight Returns or an Animatrix thing. From the Western point of view, they're paying this Japanese studio one third of the cost they would conceivably pay to get something that high quality in the United States. And from the Japanese studio, it's twice as much as what they're getting from within their own market. So it's like a win-win situation. But the other trend I'm kind of hoping to see is faith-based. The same kind of thing, but like faith-based content. So,
what do you mean faith-based?
That's the politically correct way of saying, you know, like religious work, like a Christian, usually Christian, like content made by Japanese producers for Western markets.
Like Superbook?
Yeah.
Good luck. okay.
hasn't been done recently, has it? I mean, I can think of those films that were produced by that Japanese cult, the one that thought they were reincarnations of Greek gods.
Wait, that's
Hermes Winds of Love.
I don't know that.
Well, what you're talking about is specifically a megachurch or some kind of moneyed religious organization pays Japanese animation studios to produce content for them, and you know, like Trinity Broadcasting Network and stuff that would be shown in megachurches, stuff like that.
Well, you know, it's not actually really the megachurches. You know, Fox has a faith-based division as well, Fox Faith. Like the it's kind of like I kind of feel like a lot of the Hollywood studios have you know faith-based strategies that they kind of keep on the downside, yeah. But there's a lot of money into it because you know, church people, the marketing doesn't cost very much. They spread the word and they buy the content, and they're always looking for more. And they're like, you know, they're kind of they're kind of religious otaku. You know, they're otaku about the content.
I'm having really bad nightmares of Moe, Mary Magdalene.
The camera like stopping lasciviously over Mary's butt.
Four adorable little girls can't stand the concept of gay marriage.
I can't make any comments about that.
Well, we get what you're talking about though. That's an certainly an interesting idea. But we're coming up on an hour here, and I got to get to these Twitter questions.
All right.
Okay.
So. Thanks again. That was really informative. That was very interesting.
Anytime. I love your podcast. So.
Oh, thank you. So, Twitter. From Timon, is there a constant struggle between artists and directors? And not between artists and directors, but between artists and marketing folk and like investors and stuff like that?
So, you know, the biggest another problem with the Japanese industry is that it's really not that well structured, where it's like, you know, marketing people and this kind of people, like it's essentially, you know, these small little houses, like production houses. And so they're depending on the TV network to do the marketing on TV, and they're depending on the publisher to do the print marketing and things like that, because it's all these huge monopolies on the publishing and TV end. But so on the one hand, it's not that split up, but on the other hand, yes. So it's pretty much the producer and the director. The producer is tasked with making money from this project, and the director is tasked with it's still a very auteur system. Mm-hmm. The director is tasked with making it good. So that's pretty much, at the end of the day, the water cooler talk or the talk at the bar is just about how that constant struggle. And you know, the production people, for them, that's the entertainment. So that's their big. They're having fun talking to the producers and the or they have fun watching the producers and the directors like hash it out constantly on a daily basis.
Interesting. Okay. From Severanced, our friend over at Anime World Order, do you feel that applying too much technology to animation has made animators lazy or has eliminated talent from animation? As an example, Mamoru Oshii not being able to find decent mech animators for Skycrawlers.
Oh.
Sorry, these are complicated.
Oshii Mamoru is a whole topic unto himself.
Yes, he is.
I was really happy about you last week. You know, he's kind of considered like the last great Japanese hope. I see technology. You know, from when I first came into this industry, I really felt like there wasn't enough embrace of technology. Because from an American point of view, most studios and most artists are really, really reactionary and really, really conservative. And they don't want to use the latest technology. They want to use what they're used to. And even sometimes, we were just having an argument about this last night. We know even at my studio, there's a really, really, really good animator. And he will see something that has a software that's really, really great and not like it because it's becoming mainstream, and specifically want to use a harder-to-use, lesser-known software in order to root for that company or to root for the underdog. And it's not like this logical, professional, let's just be efficient and try to make money kind of thinking, you know, mm-hmm. except amongst the producers. So that whole idea of like, this is a team effort. We all need to think about the bottom line and getting the product out and getting it done and getting it faster.
So he doesn't want to use Maya because he's Moe for Lightwave 3D. Is that like
exactly?
What we're talking about?
That's like that. What you just said is probably like a huge chunk of the industry.
Wow, man. So many problems.
The problems start in, it's just, where do you begin?
Okay, well, all right. Also from Gerald, what is your philosophy on computer animation? Do you prefer the realistic Robert Zemeckis style or the stylized Pixar style? Is one clearly better than the other to you?
So I always look at things, I have to look at things both from a producer's point of view and from a consumer's point of view. I think that the it's funny, we just had this conversation last night. From a consumer's point of view, it really comes down to the story, for me. Like, I guess, you know, the film student in me, it's like, as long as the story is cool, like the visuals are kind of an added bonus. But from a producer's point of view, I think that the highly realistic stuff, have you heard the concept of the uncanny valley?
Oh yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Oh yeah.
So I feel like that you're kind of approaching zero with that if you have it's going to be really hard to get past that creepy factor unless it looks like absolutely perfect. And the really, I think like Avatar is probably the best example of something that crossed the uncanny valley and like, okay, we can get behind this. This looks pretty cool. And I, from the Japanese anime perspective, I think that's an unattainable goal. So they should try and go towards the Pixar kind of cartoonish way. But as I was saying before, I'm starting to notice the backlash coming from the anime industry here. So I don't really know which one to put my money behind.
It sounds like
I have to say the idea of performance captured Square Enix character designs is somewhat appealing to me.
Yes, that is a very good. That's a great idea, and they need that the most. I just hope that the cost of doing that drops fast enough and soon enough, the Japanese anime industry can use it.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting point, Justin, that you just made, and it made me realize all of a sudden, Square Enix is much better at doing Bob Zemeckis' thing than Bob Zemeckis is. Because the cutscenes in Final Fantasy 13, they're all mocap. All that's animation is mocap. Yeah. There's not a whole lot of puppeteering going on there. But it crosses the Uncanny Valley. They still look like cartoon characters, but it's not that creepy Beowulf, creepy Christmas Carol, zombie-eyed thing that Robert Zemeckis has going on. Not only that, they're much better just craftsmen than what Zemeckis has going on. I really don't like Zemeckis' output, so maybe I'm a little biased. Yeah,
you know, it's funny, though. I still feel like we were just talking about this last night, too, is that the Square Enix is still... I personally can't stand the deadness of their faces.
Yeah.
They try so hard to go for these overarching, melodramatic, like, situations, but then, you know, their faces are still so... stiff.
Well, that's what Avatar got right, was they finally... Avatar's the first, you know, one of those types of films to actually get the performance capture working for the face. So that's why it connected so much, because the faces worked. But there's no facial animation going on in Square Enix's stuff, and it's all really badly performance captured in the Zemeckis stuff. So maybe moving forward, more people will be using that Avatar system, even though I'm sure it's nothing the Japanese animation industry can anywhere come close to affording.
Well, so again, that's why I feel like, you know, it'd be great. The great jump is the great, like, bridge would be if when Hollywood producers want an anime style, they can, you know, hire anime producers, and somehow that'll gradually trickle down to, you know, if anime produce, the great thing is like when anime producers or when Hollywood producers use anime style people, and they hire us, they hire the Japanese side can look at that and be like, wow, our skills can make this much money. Our skills are worth this much money. And especially if it's presented and packaged and done this way. And it's like when you do it that way, it's so great for people like me because I can point to those and I can use that when I'm talking to these old guys and be like, see, like the concepts we're trying to tell you do make money on the Western side. And you can't say it's because it's like Western art. These were Japanese people that made it using Western direction, you know, and Western production and marketing methods, you know. So that's where I really have like a lot of, you know, hope. But.
So this is sort of a general knowledge question. I'll let you take it. Justin and I already know, but you could talk about this a little bit for maybe our listeners who might not know. From Lacuna Craft, is most anime animation done on a computer, like in a computer program, or is a lot of it still hand-drawn?
Again, in my personal experience, it's a mixture of both, where it's hand-drawn on pads, connected to the computer. So it's done on the computer, but it's used, you know, everybody uses I forgot what they're called in English.
Wacom tablets?
Yes, exactly. So, and then of course, it gets to the stuff that gets, you know, sometimes you still see that in like China or like the places where, when people outsource, we used to do outsourcing to China and if a place where human resources is not a problem and you have the economies of scale to have lots of people working on something to get it done quickly, then sometimes you still see a little bit of analog 2D stuff, but in Japan, barely ever.
Right, okay. All right, well, the rest of these we've pretty much covered already, so that about wraps it up. Okay, man, well, listen, we're about done. Thank you so much. That was very informative. I learned a lot there, so thanks a lot.
Me too. Thank you. It was a lot of fun. And if you don't mind, can I just make one plug?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
One of the, companies, well, I work with a lot, and actually, if your fans would just be willing to, if they want to find out any more about what I'm doing or what companies are working on when I can talk about them and things like that, I have a kind of a sometimes updated blog. It's called youknowwhatweshouldtotallydo.wordpress.com.
Okay. It's a great title.
All spelled out, you know what we should totally do?
Yes, .wordpress.com.
I think we're both typing it in.
No, that's fine. I'll make sure to put that in the show notes as well so people know where to find you. So yeah, great. Well, that was fantastic, and thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Anytime. It was a lot of fun.
All right, folks, that's our show. I want to thank Chief for being our guest. As always, remember to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you next week.